Hello, everyone. Welcome back to For the Girls. We're here for a Canadian Grand Prix preview, and we're so excited. Tiggy is going to be holding down the fort going into this race in real life. So get ready for some super fun content from her. And also a reminder to subscribe to our For the World sustainability newsletter. You can do it on Instagram, or the link is in this episode description. And also, happy Pride Month. Check out the Racing Pride episode we did last year, also linked in the description.
And definitely stick around for the end of the episode. We have an amazing segment with ESPN's Alyssa Roenick to talk about an amazing episode that she just released called In Real Life Under the Helmet, where she kind of digs deep and gets amazing access with Jamie Chadwick and Leah Block and lots of other amazing people to talk about women in motorsport.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Chessa.
And I'm Tiggy. All right, we are back on our side of the world with a Canadian Grand Prix. I'm so excited to be here in person. For anyone who's going to be there listening, we are aiming to do a casual meetup. And by we, I mean I, sadly.
Sarah and I will be loving from afar.
Maybe I'll FaceTime you guys in.
Yeah, FaceTime us.
But we're trying to do a casual meetup at the track on Saturday, probably before quali. So keep an eye on our Instagram story for that. This is a true fan favorite. Canada has absolutely everything. An amazing track, which has been newly resurfaced. High-speed sections mixed with some low-speed corners, the Wall of Champions, and a huge crowd, like 350,000 huge. So big, big energy, and drivers also love it here. And we are in a very interesting spot this season, with the last three races having been won by different teams: McLaren in Miami, Red Bull in Imola, and Ferrari in Monaco. And the teams are within a tenth of a second of each other. So this is a very exciting time. Mercedes, maybe you're next.
Maybe this could be the Tiggy's dream. This is going to be Tiggy's dream weekend.
That would be insane. Montreal is literally my favorite city. And if Mercedes won, Fluis
there.
Won.
You go. Okay.
She speaks very good French too. I'm so excited for Tiggy to be in her best place ever at this race.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm gonna talk about the track, and then Tiggy, I'm gonna leave a pause and you say the name of the track. Okay, ready? So the track is named after one of the most famous Canadian drivers.
Gilles Villeneuve.
His son Jacques is also very famous as the only Canadian world champion. He won the race here in 1978. He was a Ferrari driver for 6 years, and tragically he passed away at the Belgian GP in 1982, and then the track in Canada was renamed after that.
One thing that's also potentially on the table this weekend is the possibility of rain. So with three different winners the last three races, possibility of rain, who knows what could happen this weekend, but Tiggy will be there to report.
I will be packing my raincoat. It's looking bleak, but it's going to be fun regardless. So for everyone going, make sure you pack, I don't know, one of those poncho things, a raincoat, comfortable clothes, because we're going to be sticking it out.
We always have something that we're going on about bringing to races. Usually it's me just saying, wear sunscreen.
And bring an umbrella, kids.
Bring a raincoat. In terms of characteristics, it's 4 kilometers long, 70 laps, lots of turns and heavy braking zones, 2 DRS zones. There is a really famous hairpin turn at turn 10 that leads into a nice long speed trap. Watch out for a lot of overtake attempts here, and drivers have to brake super hard to slow down for this. It's almost 6 Gs, which is insane. Wow. Then drivers go from 210 miles per hour to 85 in a little over a second.
Whoa.
So the deceleration is crazy. And there is an iconic Wall of Champions at the end of the circuit. It's called that because 5 world champions have crashed into this wall at the end of the lap at turn 14. So definitely keep an eye out for that.
Crazy. Hopefully none this year. For last year's race, this was a rather historic weekend last year. Max and Red Bull. Max took his 41st win, which tied him with Senna's record. Also gave Red Bull their 100th victory in the sport. So big moves all around. The race itself was a little bit more on the less eventful side, but we did see some movement between Lewis and Alonso throughout the race. We saw Alonso finish P2, Lewis P3. We did have a pretty exciting quali that weekend, though, with some tight spreads. It was also raining, so it came down to having the perfect mix of the right tires, the right time. But overall, this was a race where strategy and tire management were center of the show, and we saw a true mix of strategies with some teams executing 2 stoppers, some managing to pull off a 1 stopper. Teams also had different experiences with the tires. Even Red Bull struggled with mediums, while Ferrari seemed to manage them just fine. So definitely keep something to keep in mind this weekend.
So weren't there also issues with animals on the track last year?
Yes. Yeah. T, what's the animal again?
I forget the name of it.
Groundhogs.
Oh, it's just a groundhog.
There are groundhogs. Okay, jumping into the team. So Red Bull, as we know, they had a less than stellar weekend, or it actually wasn't even that bad for – some teams wouldn't consider it that bad, but for Red Bull, it was a pretty bad weekend, although they do feel pretty optimistic heading into their summer swing. Christian Horner called it the heart of the championship this week. And, of course, they're having a lot of pressure from McLaren and Ferrari, but they think that Monaco was kind of just an unfortunate blip. And that track specifically, Monaco being that track, highlighted the weaknesses of the car. And so they're ready to pick it back up in Canada this weekend.
And of course, the biggest news is Checo re-signing with Red Bull, not for 1 year, but for 2 years. And Red Bull did a sort of non-traditional announcement with all of the blast to the Instagram channel, which was interesting and super fun. It takes the seat off the table for Carlos, since it doesn't seem like Max is going anywhere early. So we'll discuss a lot more about this in our recap, but pretty crazy.
Speaking of Ferrari, Charles is riding a huge wave of momentum following his home win at Monaco. I think it was ESPN F1 posted his dive spot got added to Google Maps in Monaco. So already famous. And while Montreal is a very different track, it also has some similarities to Monaco with slow corners and curbs. So the Ferrari could be at an advantage given how well Monaco went. Rumors are still flying on Carlos's future, like we were saying. What do you all think is most likely for him if it isn't Red Bull?
People are really talking about Williams. They're really happy, or not really happy, but I think that's where a lot of the rumors are. And they're saying that he could have sort of like his announcement done, or that confirmation, wherever he goes by the Spanish GP, which is literally the race after next.
Yeah, he must really believe in maybe a longer term vision. I just don't know. I feel like he would be gunning for the Red Bull seat if he was looking at that as a longer term option rather than going to Williams, because like we talked about before, it's really tough at this point in your career to make the wrong move, like we've seen with Daniel Ricciardo and others. And I just feel like if he's not in a car next year that's allowing him to kind of prove his talent, it's going to be really difficult for him to then make the jump to a top team, I think. I mean, you know, not everything goes away in a year, but if you're not racing for points, which hopefully he would be, but if you're not, it just feels very risky to me. So the alternative, I guess, would be stake to go to Audi, but that's also a really unknown entity. So between those two, I guess I would choose Williams.
What about Mercedes? We haven't talked about Mercedes.
I think Kimi Antonelli is getting signed by Mercedes.
I agree. That's
my thought.
Williams has a Mercedes engine though, and people are talking about how Williams is kind of on the up and up, and that could be a good spot for Carlos. So I think that's where he'll be. I feel like Mercedes has nothing to lose at this point, and that's why they would just go straight for Kimi. They're like, go big or go home, baby. We don't need Carlos. Like, let's just go straight to the new rookie and build him out from there.
They've been so foolish at one end of the extreme or other on the Kimi Antonelli topic, though. Like, at one time, Toto's like, I'm not going to miss the next Max Verstappen, and then he admitted to kind of being rash in that statement, and now it seems like they're being more PR focused towards Kimi Antonelli again.
They're like, so don't give Kimi leverage. He can't ask for that much money yet. He's too young.
It's hard to know what they're thinking, but it's going to be really interesting. It seems unlikely that Carlos has either of those options on the table if the Williams stuff, the rumors are pretty credible, it seems. But
well, it looks like we'll find out in the next few weeks, hopefully.
Speaking of Mercedes, after a frustrating race in Monaco, the team was really looking to show how far they have come in bridging the gap to the top teams with their upgrades, but the car has just continued to be inconsistent most of the season, and the drivers have struggled with balance between fast and slow corners, of which the Montreal circuit definitely has both. So we'll see what happens there. They do have a few upgrades to the car this weekend, but still expecting to have some issues with graining, tire management. But overall, it does feel like they're really wanting some momentum. So can't wait to see what they bring this weekend. And hopefully they can just stay in the conversation with the top three teams with Red Bull, Ferrari, and McLaren. It does feel like Mercedes has kind of left the chat, which is kind of crazy. And one of the biggest highlights of last week was a Lewis on Hot Ones. It was so fun to watch. I really thought that he let his guard down, or maybe that was the spice. I don't know what it was, but he just felt very relaxed and open and funny. And I just feel like I haven't seen Lewis that at ease in an interview in a long time. So I loved it.
Speaking of teams that have left the chat, Aston Martin. That was mean. No, but so this is Lance Stroll's home race. Really exciting for him. After people love him in Canada, by the way, they truly do. And after a no points weekend in Monaco, they had an unlucky tire strategy. They didn't start on the right tire. They're going to look to obviously turn things around and get some points this weekend. In some unsurprising news this week, also Lance sort of like made a comment somewhere about how he wants his future in F1 to be at Aston Martin, and that's the team that he wants to be at. Big whoop, really surprising there, but technically not confirmed as, you know, as him being in the driver lineup for the team next year. But with those comments, I think it's pretty clear. And they're fifth in constructors right now, and they're only 20 points ahead of VCARB, who are in sixth. So they will start to get some pressure, especially if Yuki keeps performing the way he has been.
For McLaren, there's a lot to be optimistic here for the team this weekend. They've been so consistent and competitive at all the last few races with a lot of different track characteristics. So that's exciting and will definitely help them heading into this weekend. Really, really excited for Oscar's moment. I can't wait.
Oscar's moment. It has to come soon. We're all waiting. For stake, Botas in true Botas form did the Unbound Gravel, about 175-kilometer bike race. He came second in his category of men between the age of 30 to 39. Well done, Botas. This was in Kansas. So I've just been loving all the comments about how, you know, are you ready, Botas, for your side hustle Formula One race this weekend? Like, he's
seriously
doing everything, and the F1 is feeling like a side hustle, which I kind of love for him. For VCARB, Yuki has been on quite a tear lately, consistently outperforming Daniel and fighting for the points. He has had 5 points finishes and 6 Q3 appearances so far this season. The VCARB CEO did confirm that they're happy with both drivers and definitely want to get their seats, especially Yuki's confirmed for 2025. And plus, the team is closing in on Aston Martin, like we were saying. Yuki has said that he thinks the VCARB is faster. So let's see.
Damn, I might have to put Yuki in my hot takes for this weekend. For Haas, so the big news here is that Gene Haas and Tony Stewart, who are partners in the very successful Stewart Haas NASCAR team, they've announced that they're shutting it down, saying it's, you know, it's too much money, it's too resource intensive, and they have made no comment about what that would mean for the Haas F1 team. But of course, that's sparking a lot of questions about what could happen with the Haas F1 team. And of course, right now, Gene has sort of like said that he's has no interest in selling the team, but people are saying it would be opportune timing for someone else, cough, cough, Andretti, to potentially swoop in and buy the team. So that's kind of the big news that's going on in the Haas world this week.
That would be amazing, but I want Haas to stick around long enough to give Ollie Bearman his chance.
There we go.
I do love that the team principals have started just saying, well, Andretti can just buy an F1 team, as if that's a simple, straightforward solution for them. And there's so many F1 teams for sale. Like,
I mean, if that's what it takes, though, and if Haas is for sale, like, I wouldn't be mad about that way of entry.
Agreed. That'll be exciting.
For Alpine, it was announced Monday morning that Ocon will be leaving at the end of the 2024 season. The Alpine post, I thought, was quite matter of fact, but it was phrased as a mutual decision by both parties. Ocon had a bit more of a heartfelt caption to go along with the announcement. But one thing that we think is interesting to note here is that Toto Wolff is Ocon's kind of quote unquote manager, and Mercedes has been handling his career to a degree. So that part is interesting. Like, I think Toto will definitely be involved in the conversation of what Ocon's next move is. Ocon has made some comments about his ties to Mercedes being strong. He's also been rumored to go to Haas. Williams, as we've talked about, is also on the table, but James Vowell's comments make it seem a little bit more unlikely, though apparently Toto may try to exert some influence there. But what do you think? Where does Ocon go?
This is wild. And first, I think I'm shocked that this happened so quickly. We definitely said, we said in our Monaco recap that we would be shocked if he was still there, given Bruno Famin's comments, just since it's so unusual to have a team principal kind of come out publicly that strongly against one of the drivers. But I was not expecting it to be so immediate. It seems like that incident basically was at least the final straw, but got him fired, which is wild. Totally.
It is pretty crazy. I mean, his message, Ocon's message that he posted, the kind of monologue on his Instagram about the incident, I thought was actually quite good. But yeah, I guess it was just the final straw for the team.
I thought his post was really good too. I liked that it was long and kind of heartfelt. It definitely felt genuine. But crazy. I don't know where he'll go. I'm still processing the whole situation, but it's only June and we already have so many musical chairs. It's crazy.
My bet, I think, is Haas. Like, I just feel like the way James Vowles has been talking about it, James Vowles said that he doesn't think Ocon is maybe as good of a team player as you would like, something along those lines. And so if the team principal is already saying that of a team that you may or may not have a seat at, and if Carlos is on the table for the Williams seat, I think Carlos obviously would get it above Ocon. So I kind of think Haas is the move. But I guess there's also the possibility he could lose his seat entirely in F1, which is not out of the realm of possibility. I would not like to see that because I do think Ocon's a good driver, but his teammate track record is kind of rough.
I think I agree that Haas is the most likely, or losing a seat. I agreed. I think there's so many open seats and so many moving parts, and we had no rookies this year. There's so many talented rookies on the table as well, including people who are proven in an F1 race situation, like Liam Lawson, Ollie Berman. So the competition is extremely stiff, and it's bad news that it's going to be kind of fresh in everyone's minds that the reason for his availability is because of teammate issues and potentially not being able to work well within the team. I do agree. I think Haas is the most likely. I could definitely see him replacing K-Mag, and then maybe for Hulkenberg's seats, they'll want to go with a rookie or someone young. Since Ocon is
Berman,
a bit more seasoned, and Haas likes having kind of a more experienced driver in at least one of the seats, I think that could make sense.
I would be down for an Ocon-Ollie Berman pairing. I think Ocon's a really good driver. He has outperformed Pierre, I think, most of this season. But I wonder if Pierre just gave the team an ultimatum and was like, look, I'm out of here. If you don't do something about this, this is the last straw. And they can't lose both drivers. They've already lost Alonso, Ocon, and Piastri in like the last year, which is crazy. But the other question is then who takes the Alpine seat? I think there were some rumors about maybe Jack Doohan, who's the rookie there, Mick Schumacher could be coming back from WEC. There was that rumor as well. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think it could go either one of two ways, given that there's so much turmoil and shakeups in the organization and that they've been struggling this year. I could see them wanting to go with the lowest risk, kind of most experienced available driver and not with someone more young and unproven. Or I could see the alternative. If they're not doing well, they want a big revamp, they just are like, whatever, we'll give it a shot. We'll give a rookie a chance, especially since Pierre is older and more experienced. I would love to see a rookie in that seat. That'd be really exciting.
Yeah. There's also a lot of chatter about Alpine not being around in a couple years, which would be interesting.
Andretti, but, question mark?
Yeah, question mark? Maybe there's another team that's available for purchase.
Ooh, what if Gasly becomes our marquee American Andretti driver? I would love that.
I would love that too, but I do think Pierre, like, as far as the people on the grid, Pierre is one of the least American drivers in my mind, which is totally fine, but it would be kind of funny to have the most French person as our American poster child. Yeah. I'm down though.
Alpine has also confirmed the departure of their longtime operations director, Rob White, According to reports, he's been let go as part of the team's wider ongoing operational restructure. So definitely very curious about what the dynamics will be looking like in Canada.
For Williams, after picking up the team's first points in Monaco, Albon will be looking to continue his strong performance in Canada. So we're in Montreal. Congrats again on your first points of the season in Monaco. Can we be excited for hopefully many more to come this season?
I mean, I'm more a pessimist than an optimist, but I don't see why not. In some ways, I think Canada is, last year was a great track for us. It's quite similar in some ways to Monaco, just being bumpy, low speed kind of circuit, which was something which we liked in Monaco. The main thing for us, which has been a big talking point about our car, is the weight. The car's heavy. It needs to be on a diet, but it will take a bit of time for that to happen. And unfortunately for us, it just seems like Montreal it's quite penalizing to be heavy around it. So let's see.
I think the big question here is Logan, and if he will spend the rest of the season at the team, will he be replaced before the end of the season? But it does seem that for next year, it seems pretty clear that the team is looking for a replacement. This week, James Vowles basically confirmed that they've been exploring their options. And when asked about Ocon, like Tressa was saying, he said he had concerns about Ocon being a team player, but it does seem like they're hunting for a second driver alongside Albon, which very well could be Carlos.
We'll see. Oh my gosh, to have Carlos replace Logan feels like my brain is glitching. But it must be really hard for Logan too, to just know that you have this target on your back and everyone's talking about it and have to potentially finish out the season knowing that you could not have a seat next year. It's one of the conundrums of being an F1 driver. Okay, hot takes. Tiggy, tell me what you think.
This may be my first ever back-to-back hot take where I have said the same one two races in a row, but I'm going for it. Oscar Piastri is going to win the Canadian Grand Prix.
Boom.
Mic drop.
For me, I want both McLaren drivers in the top four, which could look like, I mean, both on podium would be amazing, but I'm going to say even hotter that Oscar will come ahead of Lando to make Tiggy happy.
Love. I think we've been talking so much about Carlos. I want a Carlos win. I want him to remind everyone how well he's been driving this year. And he was such a great team player in Monaco. So I'm going to go with Carlos win.
All right. These are spicy.
And very specific, so probably none of them will happen.
As per usual.
You never know. We have three different hot takes on the fire here. So for some news, the FIA president, Ben Saleem, has changed his stance on Andretti joining F1, advising him now to buy an existing team instead of forming an 11th team, which is interesting, like we were saying. There's not a lot of F1 teams available for sale very often. It does feel like Haas may be the only option, unless Aston Martin decided to sell, unless Lawrence Stroll decided to take his coin elsewhere. But
his coin. And what about his son?
I think he would go to the highest bidder. That's my bet on Lawrence Stroll. I don't think he's selling to Andretti, and I don't think Andretti is the highest bidder. I think it would be the Saudis.
And apparently, for other piece of news, Pirelli is looking to add a newer, softer tire compound for 2025 that would be better suited to the street circuits, given just how many we have on the calendar for next year.
Well, we are so excited to hear all about Tiggy's exciting experiences in Montreal. So stay tuned to follow along.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that is with Babbel. If I had one wish, it would be to speak every language, but sadly, I've given up hope on that and have turned my full focus to learning French. Ever since my family lived in Paris, I've been on a French learning journey, taking weekly classes, doing tutoring twice a week, listening to French podcasts daily. But the only consistent way I've been able to feel immersed and feel like I'm actually improving each day is with Babbel. It is so easy to integrate into my daily routine, learn how to order food, ask for directions, speak to merchants. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent, which has been a godsend for me in French. It's developed by over 200 expert linguists, and one study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. To join millions of Babbel language learners across all age groups, here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/FTG. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/FTG, spelled BABBEL.com/FTG. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Spring is over, and it's not too late to get yourself an iconic pair of Tecovas cowboy boots before the summer. They are the coolest addition to any outfit and add such a fun flair to literally anything that you're wearing. And with every pair of Tecovas boots, you can expect handmade quality, first wear comfort, which means that you don't have to break them in. You can just wear them right away. It's truly amazing. And of course, the timeless Western style that is so unique to Tecovas. The boots are made from premium bovine and exotic leathers and can truly last you your entire lifetime. So head on over to your local store. It's the best way to shop. Grab a cold one, get fitted by a pro, and shop all of the latest styles. They also offer custom branding and leather stamping if you want to personalize your boots or any of their other leather goods. Tecovas also has beautiful classic straw hats and a gorgeous lineup of rugged and full grain leather bags. And if you can't make it to a store, don't worry, you can shop online. Just visit tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Don't go gently, y'all. Women's health is so important, and balanced hormones are key to that. We've been loving Hormone Harmony, an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution for women of all ages from Happy Mammoth. Hormone Harmony contains adaptogens, which are science-backed herbal extracts that help your body adapt to stressors like hormonal changes and all the things that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Happy Mammoth as a company is so incredible. It's committed to making women's lives easier, and they actually have a whole range of products to help that. Another one that we've been loving is Estro Control, which you take to help support and balance you throughout your entire cycle, and it really helps ease all of those PMS symptoms. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off of your order at happymammoth.com with code F1RTheGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code F1RTheGirls for 15% off today. Okay, everyone. Hello and welcome. Today we are joined by Alyssa Roneck to talk about the upcoming episode of In Real Life Under the Helmet, which she hosted and which launched on Sunday on Scripps News. It's now available on streaming and YouTube, so we will link it in the show notes. Definitely check it out. It's really, really fun. So Alyssa is an author, broadcast journalist, and senior writer for ESPN, and basically an all-around legend. If you look her up, you will see her website has everything that she's done. It's so cool. And so in this episode, she kind of gets behind the scenes and spends time with drivers like Jamie Chadwick and Leah Block, who are also fellow friends of the podcast, to really understand the landscape of women in motorsport today. So welcome, Alyssa. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you, guys. What a nice intro. And thanks for the kind words about the documentary. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to work on.
We loved it so much. And we're excited that it seems like we're embarking on a bit of a new era for women in motorsport. And the episode does a great job at showing sort of the state of the union, what's to come. So for those who have not tuned in yet, you know, what is the key message, Alyssa, to you of this episode? Is it hope for the future? Is it that there's still a lot more to be done? Like, what's the main takeaway here?
Both.
Good, we love that.
And as, you know, as women who, you know this sport intricately, A, that's a really big compliment. So thank you. That means a lot. You know, if we did a good job of making an episode that you enjoyed and someone who's coming to open wheel racing completely fresh also enjoyed and learned something, then we've done our jobs. But I think it's equal parts, right? There's a lot of hope for the future. I think, you know, one of the things you realize as you cover sports and really cover anything is that talent is equally distributed around the world. Doesn't matter if you're man or woman, what your nationality, your color, or background is, opportunity is not. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I was really hopeful about coming out of this reporting was that there's a lot of work being done to close the opportunity gap, right? And so in doing that, there's, you know, when you, and especially at the grassroots level, maybe more than any sport, this sport, when you have 20 spots at the top, I mean, there are more NFL quarterbacks than there are Formula One drivers. That is crazy.
Crazy. Wow.
And so you really need to get, you know, you need 100 girls and 100 boys at 10 years old at those karting tracks. So then, you know, they can sort of equally keep moving up the ranks. And so there's a lot of work being done to create more opportunity for young women. And there's still a lot of work to be done. You know, I mean, there are zero women driving in Formula One. So I think that shows, you know, when it's 50, you know, one of my favorite quotes is that Ruth Bader Ginsburg quote, you know, when will there be enough women on the Supreme Court? When there are 9, right? And so when there are at least 50-50 women in Formula One, then you can say like, okay, we're there, or we're getting there. Or maybe when there's 20 women in Formula One racing. So right now there's 0. So I think that's pretty clear. There's a lot of work to be done, but a lot of work is being done. So yeah, it's a good question. I think it's pretty 50-50 right now.
Yeah.
So speaking of what work has been done, it is a very hopeful sort of note that was struck in the episode. What are you most hopeful for about women in motorsport?
Well, I mean, one of the things that was very surprising to me is, you know, spending time with Jamie Chadwick. I think, you know, Leah's so young and wide-eyed and, you know, you sort of need that generation who have had these doors open for them, who don't see barriers. And then spending time with Jamie and realizing, you know, how successful she's been, how talented she is, and still how freaking difficult it has been even for her to get into an F3 car. And so she is really one of those special people who is spending almost equal parts of her life chasing her own dream and trying to make the road easier for the women coming behind her. She has a driving academy for young girls in karting. That made me very hopeful. I think other women seeing the relationship she has with Leah and with the other young women and how truly, honestly, she wants to see them succeed and to do things to help them succeed, I think is really important for other women to see that and to see that you can chase your own dreams while also helping to lift up other women around you. Men have been doing it for a really long time. And so I think it's really cool to see her reaching down and pulling other young drivers up alongside of her while she still truly does have aspirations to, you know, to get into an F1 seat, an F2 car. What else has me hopeful? So one of the things I learned talking to Jamie, you know, that I never really thought about is when you look at IndyCar, NASCAR, all these, you know, other types of driving, and especially in the States, there have been women and women role models. And, you know, in speaking with her, when she came over here and started driving in Indy Lights, how much more difficult it is physically to drive an Indy car than it is a formula car.
Yeah, because of the
this tiny woman. I mean, I'm 5'2", and I'm looking at her in the eyes, and I was like, whoa, I expected her to be this big strapping woman, you know, and she's tiny, and she's having success in a car that is physically much more difficult to drive than these formula cars. And so when you realize it's not about size, it's not about her strength, it's about the opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. That girl in an F3 or an F2 car, and arguably she will have some success. And so that was pretty interesting seeing how Indy and even NASCAR are really trying to get women into the sport and how far Formula One has to go to catch up with, you know, that was surprising to me that here in the US, and you know, she kept saying, well, you know, in the US they give you time to succeed in formula racing. You know, they want you get one chance, and they're
very cutthroat.
Yeah. And there's this, you know, in the piece I wrote for ESPN that was a lot more about Jamie and Leah's relationship. You know, one of the things people kept saying to me was sort of this unspoken issue, which is that every team wants a woman in the driver's seat. They want to, you know, to say like, we have the woman. They're afraid of it being the wrong woman or the right woman at the wrong time. And if she doesn't come in and win immediately, she's going to set back all women everywhere. However, that happens to men all the time.
Totally. And they're not held to the same standard at all.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Which is definitely frustrating. And I can only imagine from, you know, the perspective of the women who are actually doing it. So talk to us about the process of making this episode. What attracted you to the story? How did you zero in on Jamie and Leah and Jess Edgar and the profiles that you chose to showcase?
Well, I have to say, I was incredibly lucky. You know, I work for ESPN full time, and I got an email from Meg Hilling, who is my producer. So this, one of the really cool things about this episode of In Real Life and the ESPN piece is they were both edited and produced by women. So you had a woman who was reporting and hosting, but you also had women behind the scenes, which was very, very cool. And as you can see, you met Elise. Also, you have women working on the production, on the PR side. I mean, there's just a lot of women working on this episode, which was very, very cool. But Meg was familiar with my work and had reached out and just said, hey, you know, In Real Life is starting to, we want to do some sports themed episodes. We have this idea. This was completely Meg's idea. She had started doing the research and she reached out and said, would you be interested in reporting and hosting this? And yes, it took a little bit of work to get an approval and a yes from my bosses at ESPN. And I was really fortunate. They said yes and sort of put me on loan. I felt a little bit like Jamie Chadwick. I was like, yeah, Williams loaned her out to Andretti. ESPN loans me out to Scripps News for a bit of time. And so the nice thing that came of the reporting and work was a really beautiful long form piece for ESPN that really we would not have gone after or been maybe thinking about if not for Meg coming to me and asking me to report this story alongside of her. You know, I kept telling her and Zach and everyone I worked on with this, that I felt very much like a guest in the In Real Life house. And I was just, my goal was just not to break anything while I was there. and really it was such a cool experience. I had such a good time, but we got this great ESPN piece out of it, this beautiful documentary, a podcast we did for ESPN. We're, you know, doing things like your podcast. So this has been, so much has come of those, you know, 2.5 months of reporting. And so what we did was we went over to the UK for a couple of weeks, went to Williams, went to Roden Carlin. We spent time with Jamie at the gym and walking around downtown London, spent time with Leah. Then we went to, where did we go next? We went to Monterey for some Indy Lights testing out at Laguna Seca. We went to St. Petersburg for the Indy race, but also it was the first Indy Lights race of the year, Indy Next now race of the year. And then did some additional reporting over Zoom, just sort of catching up with everyone after, you know, Leah's first Formula One Academy race as Jamie was continuing on with her season.
That's incredible. We actually met Jamie at Laguna Seca for the first time. Right. So, yeah.
At she's the same time.
Fair. Yeah.
We were all there together.
I know.
Oh, I wish I'd known. How cool.
Next time for sure.
Was there anything super unexpected about the process or things that you learned? Having maybe, you know, you've been familiar with the whole world throughout your career, but anything that kind of blew your mind or was really eye-opening?
About the actual process of making the documentary?
Or just learning about this, you know, the uphill battle, so to speak, of women in motorsport right now?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, really, Jamie was really impactful because from the outside, you look at this woman and she was so incredibly talented. I mean, she won every season of the W Series, right? And even in, you know, I called a lot of my colleagues who cover Formula One exclusively and some of the guys who write about Formula One for us or for ESPN. And, you know, they kept, you know, they even asked me like, why isn't she, you know, we don't even understand why she's not in a Formula 3 car, Formula 2 car. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that was meaningful that, you know, those, you know, from afar, it was a big question that I had, you know, certainly money, you know, it's an expensive sport. The closer you get to it, the more you realize, like, why does anyone go into this sport, right? Like, you think about growing up, how expensive gymnastics is, or, you know, my family, my husband's family grew up in motocross. That seems impossibly expensive. And now you start moving into cars and then, you know, it is impossibly expensive. And so for someone like Jamie, who's coming from a, you know, a regular middle-class family and is doing it on talent and scholarships and winning, and you know, there were a couple of years you're winning $1.5 million and you still cannot, you know, with sponsors and with the money you're winning, put together a ride at the next level, you know, to be around her and to, she's still so positive and that belief in yourself and belief that you can still do it. But to know how, you know, how do you not get so frustrated? How do you not give up, right? How do you keep believing in yourself? It's really powerful. I really do believe, having been over here and sort of seeing how the Indy program works compared to Formula, you know, I'm very hopeful that we see an American team expand the grid.
Oh yes,
us too.
I was standing with Jamie at Williams when two things happened while we were there. One was the news that Lewis was leaving.
Wow.
Oh my God.
So she got a text before the news broke. And she sort of looked up from her phone and was like, whoa, you know. and then also, you know, Andretti not being approved to be added, you know, to the Formula One grid. And seeing her process both of those in real time was so interesting because in theory, both of those could impact her.
Oh yeah.
100%.
For Formula One. Right. And so, yeah, that was, but I do believe that Andretti, you know, they have as good a chance of anyone. And I spent some time talking to Mario at, in St. Pete,
you know,
and Michael, but you know, it was cool how much belief they have in her. And, you know, to be talking to, you know, one of the few Americans who've raced over there, certainly the most successful American in Formula One, and to see how excited he was about the prospect of her being maybe that Andretti, one of the Andretti drivers that, you know, brings them into Formula One was also very cool.
That's such an exciting prospect for us, obviously, right? As Americans and as women, but we are fully backing the Andretti train. And it does seem like they're fast moving. So fingers crossed for them. We want to switch gears a little bit to you and your background. So you've spent a lot of time covering motorsports. You've served as a reporter at the Global Rallycross Series. In 2015, you actually competed and became the first American driver to win the Moroccan Women's Rally, which is incredible. It's the toughest all-women's off-road rally in the world. How did you find yourself in that position? What was that experience like? Would love to hear a little bit about that.
Being asked by someone who I really respect and admire and feeling very lucky about it. But I had known about I've done the Rebel a few years. That's now the American version of the Gazelle. Mm-hmm. So the Gazelle rally in Morocco, I'd known about it for a few years. I'd always wanted to go and cover it. And there were a few years where we did an X Games, a Winter X Games in Tignes, France. And it's sort of on the, you know, it's very close sort of, and the timing worked out. So I was trying to figure out how I could go from there and go cover this rally. And one of my good friends, Chrissy Beavis, who at the time was the navigator for Travis Pastrana and for Subaru in Rally America, was trying to put a program together to go and do this rally. And, you know, it's a navigation rally. So it's a painfully meticulous way to drive a vehicle through really dangerous terrain, but it's really about going in a straight line. So you wake up in the morning at like 4 a.m. and you do a lot of math, and you know, you're navigating with old school. You turn your phone and computers in on day one, and you don't have access to anything for 14 days.
Wow.
So that was also a big deal, right? To get approval to do that. And so you're navigating with old, with compasses and maps that were drawn in the 50s of the Moroccan desert. I mean, it is a wild.
Oh my gosh.
And so Chrissy had always wanted to do this. She had done this race with an athlete, and she wanted to go back and do it again. And, you know, Chrissy is one of the most brilliant, talented navigators and drivers in rally. And she wanted to go back and win. And one of the things about that rally is you have to do it. You know, it's as much about teamwork, communication. You're in a car with someone for 12 to 15 hours a day, and sometimes longer, sleeping out. So it has to be someone you want to be in a car with for that long. I mean, we watched best friends never speak to each other again.
Oh, no.
You know, it was, and so she started working with Subaru to put a team together, and she reached out. You know, we got to know each other while I was a lot better while I was the reporter for Rallycross, and she just reached out and said, I think you'd be good at this, and I think I would want to sit in a car with you for 15 hours a day. Would you be willing to do this? Here's how we would train for it. And I mean, I said yes before I really knew even what I was getting
into. That's awesome.
And so the Subaru program ended up falling apart. And for a while we thought we weren't going to be doing it. And then Mercedes came in and they were introducing the Sprinter van in the US. So I started training to learn how to drive a four-wheel drive Sprinter van through sand dunes. And
that's amazing.
It was incredible. But yeah, we I started running a lot more in the sand, near my house in Santa Monica at the time, and started taking, you know, navigation courses, going to Glamis here in Southern California and driving a lot. And, you know, the navigator is the rock star of that team. Your job as a driver is to not break the car over 14 days, because if you don't get to the finish line, you don't finish. And
wow.
It was really all I wanted to do was get her that win. And when it was over, yeah, I mean, how cool, you know, in Chrissy's life, it really mattered. In my life, I was like trying to explain to people, no, you know, this is really cool. No one really understood what it was, but yeah, how cool to be able to be it was the 25th anniversary of the race. We were the first American women to win it. And it was the hard, you know, without a doubt, one of the hardest things I've ever done. And then Emily Miller, who put that program together, started the Rebel Rally here in the U.S.
Amazing.
Which is, also very cool. And I've done that a few times as well and haven't won it. We've come in second.
One day.
That's still on the horizon. So maybe
on the bucket list
for sure. To go do it again.
Yeah. Tiggy, I wonder if we would survive. Tiggy was a math major in college. So she
oh my gosh, you guys are perfect.
I could do the navigation, maybe not the driving.
But you know,
that's perfect.
I hate adrenaline. I hate driving. So we'd have to find someone else.
And the best team are, you know, a driver who also, you know, I love math. I want, you know, and so helping and then a navigator who also can get in there and drive sometimes too. Cause yeah. And spot.
Yeah, incredible.
I'm pitching you guys to go.
Let's go. So last question for you. I mean, obviously you've had an incredible career spanning all sorts of sports from X Games, football, the Olympics, and more. And of course, now you've been working in motorsport and you had this incredible episode. Do you think having worked on all of those different sports helped inform the episode that you did? And how do you think motorsport is unique to all the other sports that you've covered?
Oh, incredibly. Yeah. So the first part of that question, you know, look, I mean, especially the Leah Block part of that story.
Yeah.
That was, you know, I have different memories than she has, right? You know, mm-hmm. from the time she was a little girl, I remember Lucy and Ken bringing her and her siblings to the X Games and to Rallycross. And I remember her driving her cute little pink electric car around the Rallycross pits and, you know, was friends, you know, am friends with Lucy, her mom, and was friends with her father. And, you know, there were few people in action sports I respected as much as Ken Block. You know, I loved interviewing Ken because he was, you know, he had the best bullshit meter of almost anyone I'd ever met. And if you asked, he held you to a really high standard, right? You know, if you're interviewing him and, you know, if you ask a good question, oh, that's a good question. You know, I remember almost, you know, you almost feel proud, you know, like you ask a lazy question and Ken was going to call you out on it if you were on live TV or not. Right. And so I just always liked that about him. He was so, when the camera was off, I think he was even better. He was not naturally comfortable in front of the camera. He taught himself how to be because he knew how powerful that was, obviously, but just one of the most creative people and thoughtful people. And it was always an honor to sit and have a conversation with him. And so to bring years of, you know, and Leah's whole life was informed by action sports, which is something that my career has been rooted in. And so I think the way she sees the world very much was informed by being around skateboarders and motocross athletes and BMXers who fall a million times and get up one more and believe anything is possible. Right. And so I think all of that really informed it. And then of certainly all the work I had done writing about Formula One or IndyCar informs what the experience I was having covering these women. I write a lot about women's sports as well. So I think that also really carried over. And then, you know, I think the thing about motorsports that, and it was so nice to be able to interview Lucy Gold and some of the other women around the sport is that you see the driver, but there are few sports that are such, I mean, there is maybe no bigger team than a Formula One race team, right? The first time I went to a Formula One race was in Monza in like 2006, maybe 2005, 2007, somewhere around there. And standing in that garage was mind blowing.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable, right? Having been in a NASCAR, an IndyCar garage, you know, you think like, how many, you know, you sort of look over, you're like, what is the driver doing? You know? And so I think that is the thing that makes motorsports really special is that it is a massive team effort. And if one part of that team isn't firing on all cylinders, you're not going to win that day. But that driver both gets all of the accolades and praise, but you know, if your mechanic or your engineer or anyone else falters, that driver is also carrying all the blame, right? So it's a lot of pressure on this one person, but man, it's a big team. And I think that is something that is different from other sports.
Yeah. We talk about that all the time. It's such a good point. I love what you said about the blocks as well. We got to know Leah a little bit. We sat down with her ahead of Miami and it was just such a lovely conversation. We met her mom as well, who's incredible and she was joking about how, you know, she grew up in the rally world and the extreme sports world. She's like, I can wear my white pants to the track for F1 Academy and like they don't get dirty, which is really sweet.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, you would never wear, I don't even own white clothes.
Exactly. Well, Alyssa, thank you so much. This was an incredible conversation. We are so excited for everybody to see this episode. We can tell how much love and care and thought went into it, and people are going to love it. So thank you for taking the time with us.
Yeah, thank you. It was so nice to meet both of you, and it was an honor to be here.